You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Now, I was just wondering if one of the children would like to light the chalice today. Ellie, do come forward. Fantastic. We light this chalice for our joys and concerns, our disappointments and our hopes, for family, friends and foes, for Mother Earth and all those who dwell therein. Welcome, everyone, today. Our church has been here since 1854, and I guess the original Unitarians had no idea they were on Kaurna territory. I've understood about the Aborigines, but I don't know that they had a concept of Aboriginal nations like we do now. Well, we have that now, and we honour and respect their elders past and present. The Unitarian Church, as you know, is a creedless one. We have our principles, and when you read principles, there's a lot of wiggle room. Which is good, because I think we're a bunch that need a bit of wiggle room with ideas. It's lovely to see so many people here today that we haven't seen for a while, for one reason or another, but it's lovely to see a nice full church today. There will be coffee, tea and a few snacks after the service, and once you're sitting down, it's okay to take the masks off at that time. Now, today we have a really good story, and I'd invite the children to come forward. I haven't got separate slides for it, so kids, you do need to come forward to see the pictures, and the pictures are absolutely fantastic.
This story is called The Big Little Thing. One summer's day, the thing came by. It slipped right past Sebastian's feet. A little girl tried to catch hold of it, as if it were a fly. The crocodile lady waited for it for many long months, standing at her front door. She never saw it. Some people can't recognize it, even when it's right before their very eyes. Someone walked straight past it in the middle of a rain shower, just for a minute or two. No more than that. But a minute was enough. I wonder if you've got any ideas yet as to what it might be. During the summer holidays, it slid beneath someone's hand, a slight crackling, and then there it was. That was all. An old gentleman found it inside a snowflake in the deep cold that came from the distant lands. And for just a moment, he thought he was little again. Got any more ideas? You've got an idea. Your imagination? That's a very good answer. A lot of children, when they grow up, discover that they can no longer find it in the toy box or in the cookie jar. Oh, well, they say to themselves, it's probably for the best. Hard to believe, but some people are actually afraid of it. Shut their doors, move far away from their neighbours, and build high walls. One day, perhaps as a joke, the thing hid itself inside a tear and filled a man with nostalgia for the old days.
What's nostalgia?
Sadness. You know, when you look back on something and you miss what you had? One of my pet cats, I have a wave of nostalgia about Pickle. Something that you've lost but you wished you still had. Some of us find it in familiar smells or in tender glances or in other people's arms. Others chase after it constantly. Sometimes they try to build it with money or to shut it up in a box. But it can't be kept. It only ever passes through. Swirling like a leaf, it comes to rest on somebody's shoulder, then quickly flies away again, vanishing in an instant. And there it was, nestling right under our noses. But once again, we failed to spot it. What was it?
Friends?
Anybody else got any ideas?
What are the kids suggesting?
Friends?
It could be imagination.
I know it could be imagination, and I think that was an excellent idea, but if you think about some of the things that were said, it's perhaps a bit more than our imagination. Anybody out there? Yes?
Love.
Love, that's an excellent answer as well.
Happiness, joy?
This tiny invisible thing, which is also a great big thing, that somebody once named...
Happiness.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Great story. Great suggestions. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. That book's for my great nephew Max's birthday, so I'll have it back. Thanks, Helen. It's absolutely glorious. And of course, happiness is one of those ephemeral things. You cannot hold on to it, and we try very hard to hold on. We come to that part of the service where we honour the joys, concerns and insights. But let's stick to the headline version of the story rather than the main body, as they call it, on IT programs. I'll light the first candle and then I'll invite people to come up to either light a candle in silence or to speak briefly.
Thank you.
progress is a bit like development. It refers to movement to an improved state. It often refers to gradual betterment, which is exactly what we want after an illness or an injury. Progress and development are often used interchangeably, but if we're to be a bit more precise, progress is movement toward a goal, and development's more multi-directional. Progress is part of the bigger picture of development. Progress tends to be linear, onwards and upwards, whereas development is more multifaceted. Both words, progress and development, may have sinister connotations, for example, in the context of town planning. In the iconic Aussie movie, Muriel's Wedding, Muriel's dad was a local government politician whose slogan was, "You can't stop progress." Bill Hunter played the blustering patriarch, one of Australian cinema's most pungently awful characters. He was not actually evil, but he raised a tribe of children to believe that they were useless, and that's pretty much how they behaved. So, bearing in mind that progress is in the eye of the beholder, or it's what looks like progress may not be progress, like in the poem that Brenda read us, let's have a little interactive time to share with those sitting near you. I'm going to show 5 slides, and there are 2 questions about each one. First one, what is it? And the second one is, do you see this as progress? So this is buzz time. There's our first one. So that was tall buildings. I remember going up the Sears Tower in Chicago, and it was about the year 2000, and the Malaysians had just pipped the Yanks with the Malaysian Petronas Towers. They were 33 feet higher than that. Well, of course, now the next biggest building, which is the Burj Khalifa Tower in Dubai, it's 1,000 feet taller than that, all up 828 metres in our language. Well, that is progress, but does it excite you? Here's another one. What does this one bring to mind? Well, it's indicative of a more profound change. 3 billion people now are on social media. 90% of Americans are online now, and apparently Australia, it's up to 89%. And as for mobile phones, you go to places like India, and nearly everybody owns one. The internet has revolutionised the way we do business, how we're informed, how we entertain ourselves. And the internet, of course, enables bullying, the spread of misinformation. It enables us to keep in contact with our family during lockdowns. It enables COVID tracking and disease monitoring. So very much a mixed blessing. Can we see what this one is? Yeah, that's it. It's a self-driving car. They're already being tested in major cities across the country. Tesla, GM, Ford, Apple, Google, Uber, they're all doing it. Will it mean the end of road rage and drink driving? Or will we never quite get there? Well, this one's a social movement, and it has certainly led to looking at the legal system in particular in the States and police practice and so on. And so is this one. The progress, admittedly, is snail-like. American prisons are still full of black people, and women are still underrepresented in positions of power and overrepresented in statistics for domestic violence. But if you just look at what Australia was like or what America was like at the beginning of the 20th century, you can see that women and minorities did it rougher then than they do now. There were whites-only spaces, and there was a widespread denial of educational and employment opportunities and so on. Now, that last slide showed Tarana Burke, who was the instigator of the Me Too movement. This movement was massively reported when it hit Hollywood because of Harvey Weinstein. But it didn't end there. Swimming Australia and gymnastics coaches the world over were pulled in and being held to account. It's emerging now that many of the victims were not women. They were young boys. They were men. A New York Times article in 2018 reported on 201 men in positions of leadership, that's the arts, business, politics, losing their jobs because of Me Too pressure, because of sexual misdemeanours. And their replacements were almost half women. Back in 2005, when Burke started working on the Me Too movement, it was very difficult to get people on board. Activists, organisers, youth workers, social justice warriors, they'd all agree it's necessary work. They congratulated her for taking it on. But they wouldn't help. It wouldn't do too much to support her efforts. What motivated her were the little black and brown girls who trusted her with their secrets, their pain, their shame, their anger, their fears, and their hopes. In 2017, this changed suddenly because Hollywood actresses tweeted their experiences. Suddenly, it was all over the internet with no acknowledgement of the origin of the movement, no acknowledgement of where the language came from or the founder, and Tarana was distraught. It didn't take her long to process this. I fell asleep with that on my mind and woke the next morning with a different fire. I didn't know who, if anyone, would listen, but it was clear that I had to share my vision for this movement with the world. It was clear that all the folk who were using the Me Too hashtag and all the Hollywood actors who came forward with their allegations needed the same thing as my little black girls in Selma. Space to be seen and heard. They needed empathy, they needed compassion, and a path to healing. I wanted to be part of making sure that they had what they needed. Now, last week, Tarana Burke joined Australian journalist Lee Sales for an interview on how the term believe survivors is very different from believe anyone without question. Joining Sales for an interview on ABC's 7:30, Burke discussed the genesis of Me Too and how it was created to provide a sense of acceptance and belonging amongst individuals who'd experienced sexual assault or abuse. Toward the end of the interview, Burke discussed how believe survivors as a term should not be misinterpreted. It shouldn't be interpreted as believe everyone and anyone. However, it does mean that you begin by taking people seriously and listening from a place of trust rather than mistrust. And the usual place for starting was not to take it seriously. People making complaints would be questioned. Things were said like, what were you wearing? Where were you? All this sort of stuff, which basically comes from a position of disbelief. Now, what believe the person means doesn't mean you assume that everything's right and some bloke is to blame, but you assume automatically that it needs to be investigated. It means you don't shut down the survivor. Social progress is a necessary component of development. And healthy and educated individuals are far more able to contribute to the well-being and management of their societies. The problem with being cynical about change is that we can fail to capitalise on breakthroughs and advances, and we can regress. My cohort of feminists did not pass on a positive attitude toward feminism, and the next generation of girls rejected the label. The sluts of the 50s and 60s became the skanky hoes of the 80s and 90s, and their insecurity wasn't bolstered up by the bravado of the feminists of the 70s, you know, the burn your bra and hairy armpit and all that. I mean, you can laugh at it, but there was a confidence, and it wasn't an atmosphere in which plastic surgery, Botox and liposuction could thrive. The 80s and 90s, when feminism was reviled by the younger generation, was when all this body-shaming crap really took off big time. Ashley Brilliant is an Englishman who emigrated to the United States. He makes his living taking pot shots, marketing T-shirts emblazoned with quirky remarks like, "Everyone is entitled to my opinion. Using your intelligence can sometimes make life much more complicated. Being humble with me is a matter of pride." But this one on the screen, I think, is right on the money. You can't stop progress, but you can help decide what is progress and what isn't. Progress is not modernity. Poetry, music, and art do not progress over time in the same way that physics and chemistry do. You can't say that Philip Glass is better than Beethoven, or the other way around. It just doesn't work the same way. Medical science has progressed colossally. Hip replacements, keyhole surgery, rehab after strokes. But this progress has not been without setbacks. Now, what I have here is Thomas Questhoff, victim of a major 20th century setback in the pharmaceutical industry.
The end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I say it clear, I state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way.
That was a song I thought I didn't like. But that really changed my mind, finding that one. It's in this context is everything, isn't it? He was a victim, of course, of the thalidomide tragedy. He adored singing. He had a superb bass baritone voice. He was denied entry to a specialist music education because of his inability to play the piano. Fancy not being able to play the piano. But fortunately, he was championed by Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and had a stellar career as a musician, a singer, a teacher, and even a conductor. Now, as a child in the 1950s, I was brought up with the idea of progress as inevitable and good. Stone Age man was replaced by Bronze Age man, and then you go to the Iron Age. You go from flat earthers to circumnavigators of the globe, creationists to evolutionists. But by the end of my high school education, the seeds of doubt were sown, mostly by history teachers. The scramble for Africa, World War I, World War II, the Holocaust. By the time I got to university, scepticism about progress had even spread to science, with philosophers like Thomas Kuhn opining that science does not evolve gradually toward truth. Science has a paradigm which remains constant before going through a paradigm shift. When current theories can't explain some phenomenon, someone proposes a new theory. I'm not sure I totally ever understood this or totally agreed with it, as scientific and technological advances are pretty compelling, aren't they? What I find more compelling and relevant to life on the planet in the 21st century are the writings of Jared Diamond. Now, he writes about the collapse of societies. Failures occur when societies enter a progress trap. A progress trap is a practice that drives environmentally unsustainable growth and is difficult to halt once it's in motion. Think of Easter Island and the collapse of various civilizations in the past. As society grows, its ability to exploit its environment increases, which causes development to accelerate. The society grows exactly up to a point at which the resources are depleted. At that moment, the rate of development and the level of development are up there, and then immediately afterwards, with the material foundation gone, you get total collapse. Now, this trajectory presupposes that society makes no attempt to renew the resources on which it depends. Diamond isolates factors that explain the blindness, and the one that's particularly relevant is the adherence to dysfunctional value systems, sticking to entrenched beliefs and practices and robbing the future to pay the present. Now, reading Diamond isn't totally depressing because he believes that the factors are changeable by individual and collective acts of will. He also documents successes as well as failures. Societies that recognised and altered their unsustainable practices before it was too late. Historic examples of these include Tokugawa in Japan and Tikopia, an island in the South Pacific. These societies were flexible and far-sighted, where unsuccessful ones were rigid and focused on the present. The growth of population and pollution, the depletion of crucial resources, are features of a civilization immediately before a collapse. Increasing interconnectedness means that the globe now will either succeed as a whole or fail as a whole. What Diamond is suggesting that the same kind of collective rationality that prevented small-scale collapse can prevent global collapse. In the next 100 years, individual and group choices will determine whether or not we collapse. It's now clear that natural limits on growth exist. The exact limits can't be known until they're reached. But rather than proceeding as if no environmental limits exist, it's more prudent to estimate the limits and develop policies accordingly. It's better to slow down and come to a halt a few feet before a brick wall than to ignore it and slam into it. Now, theories of progress might be sus, but there are worthwhile aspects. Firstly, theories of progress draw attention to the power of the Western scientific paradigm. Next, theorists of progress formulate plausible normative standards, that's ethics, to govern life, and that is something we are committed to. As Unitarians, we look to our principles. And lastly, the writings on progress contain some of the most powerful statements of the Enlightenment ideals of freedom, equality, and cosmopolitan justice. What you believe depends on your experience, your temperament, your cast of mind. In the end, I find it more cheerful to believe we can progress and more conducive to mental health and happiness. So I commend to you the power of the positive, the glass half full rather than the one half empty.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.